cosmology in quantum theory. And so if you have any lingering questions about the double slit experiment, just exactly what the electrons are doing, which slit they were going through, exactly what electrons are, and kind of deep philosophical stuff, what kind of picture is going on in the quantum world, then Hans will be the perfect person to talk to about that. Hopefully he should make things a little clearer, or maybe it'll just make things even more confused, but it's very interesting stuff. So we looked at the two postulates up here, pretty much just from these two starting points, these really, really two simple points, you can derive the rest of special relativity. And there's this incredible economy and elegance there that really, really is, well, it's one of the hallmarks of Einstein's genius, that he could just distill down to two sentences. And, I mean, you can, basically, it's very, they're not too difficult to explain to people. I guess the most difficult concept is the inertial reference frame. There's not a lot of complex mathematics involved, but it's very impressive. And you saw just something very, very strange with the speed of light. You know that everyone measures the speed of light to be c, all inertial observers, no matter what their velocity relative to the source of it is. Even if you're rushing away from the source at 99.9999% speed of light up towards the source, you still see light traveling at c. And that's a very, very strange thing. It was one of the postulates, something Einstein assumed, but it's also something we have, I mean, people have been doing many, many experiments in many different contexts about that. And there are a lot of experiments. And one thing I will say, if you are interested in knowing more about that, that was actually one of the tough questions from last year. People said, what is the evidence for the constancy of the speed of light? And so what we did, if you look on Perimeter Institute's website, we actually wrote up answers about a page long for that. So if you go to our website, so it's www.perimeterinstitute.ca, and then go to the outreach section, and then there's a section for teachers, and if you go there, then you can see the answers to that question. There's another one, so I talk about the experiment, the Feynman experiment, in a bit more detail, but also there was another one. I mean, a lot of experiments have been done with binary stars that are rotating and orbiting around each other, and then they actually have seen, actually measured to a very high degree, the constancy of the speed of light. So there's a lot of evidence for it. Okay, and space-time diagrams, really, a diagram like this, a way of plotting happenings, or events, to use a technical term, in space and time, time up in the vertical axis, space across on the horizontal axis. So it's a little bit sort of idealized. We just have one dimension of space. So really, when we see this, we're just dealing with events that are happening in a line, say, all on the x-axis. So it's generally that's what we'll do. It's just that it's harder to draw three-dimensional diagrams. And if you really want to draw the full-blown thing, three dimensions of space, one dimension of time, then that's a four-dimensional diagram. And if you can draw one of those, then good luck to you. I cannot. So that's why we kind of just keep things down to the essence, but you can still get a lot of good information out. And we looked at, okay, so I think we're right about up here. So we're kind of, we've got this sort of space and time, and if this was an XY graph, we'd want to get an idea of the distance between two points in space. Now we want to do a similar thing, but it's space and time. It's kind of strange, the distance between two events in space and time. And the technical term for the distance is the metric. So I want to get an idea of this metric, or how we actually measure between A and B, where there are two happenings in space and time. And what we'll see is things are a little bit strange, a little bit counterintuitive, not how you might expect. So so let's say we just picked a random country, and we want to pick 2 points in that random country. Oh, I didn't even notice this. We want to measure the distance between them. Say one could be Sydney, Australia, and the other could be Brisbane, Australia. Both good cities, I have to say. Then we just use, neglecting the curvature of the Earth, obviously, we use the Pythagorean theorem. We just find, we basically do some sort of horizontal x-axis and some vertical y-axis, and then just find the distance squared. The distance is delta x squared plus delta y squared. So that's obvious, it's intuitive, Pythagoras, been known for over 2,000 years. And that actually equation there technically, well, I guess there's only one equation there. It's called a metric equation. So that's just a, it's a distance equation. So we want the same sort of thing, but it's with space and time. So we're going to have something like that, but one of the terms here will be a space, and the other one will be a time. We just want to know exactly what the right equation is. So to have a look at this, let's kind of do, it's not really a derivation, it's more a plausibility argument for this. So perhaps it's just this here, we just replace, instead of the old y squared, we replace something like t squared, but obviously we want it to be a distance, because we've got a distance here and a distance here. So to actually make a time, a distance, we may multiply it by the speed to get the units the same. So why not do the speed of light, seeing we're dealing with special relativity? So this might be our first guess. But plus sign there, it's Euclidean, but we'll find out. Well, let's have a look and go through the math or an argument to see what happens. So let's, to help side, let's think about a light clock. And a light clock is something a lot of you will know, would be familiar with, and have used before. So basically, we measure time by things like these, watches or clocks. And the way they work, there's just some regular process within them ticking away. Electronic process related to, I guess, often it's a quartz watch or something like that. So, but we don't have to use watches. Any regular process works. I mean, people use, ancient Romans used candle clocks that kind of basically burn at a constant rate. Chinese people use water clocks, anything that works. Sundials, for example. And so here we have, this is what we call a light clock. And it's just, we might have a little laser beam here, and there's a hole in the bottom mirror, we turn that on, that sets one photon going up to the top mirror, and then back down, and it just repeats, it just bounces back and forth, like this. And obviously, we keep a constant distance between the top mirror and the bottom mirror. So it takes an equal amount of time to go up to the top and then to go back down and up to the top again and back down again. So it's a regular process. So we can actually, it's a good clock. We can actually use that to mark our time. Each tick of our clock could just be the time it takes to go up and then back down again. So that's how we're going to measure time. One unit of time, one tick. That's fine. And what we'll do is we'll consider this light clock from the perspective of someone just standing there sitting at rest relative to the light clock. And also someone moving at of some velocity v to the left of it. So in that case, if you're moving to the left of the light clock, you see it rushing to the right of you. And if you see it rushing to the right of you, then you actually see the light as it bounces back up and down. The photon is actually moving to the right. So you won't see it as going up and down like this. What you'll see it is doing is following a diagonal path. So it will go up and to the right and back down again. And so notice the important thing is, obviously, if it goes up and long a bit, then that path, that diagonal path, is going to be longer than this path here. So this is how we measure time. This is just looking at the light clock from a different reference frame, from someone rushing at velocity v to the left of it. So let's note that we're looking for this idea of the distance between space and time, the analogy or the analogous thing to the distance between, say, Sydney and Melbourne. So what we do is so we use the symbol S. So it's we're talking about space-time, so let's use the symbol S and something other than D, just because it's a different thing. It's not a normal distance in space, but space and time, so a different symbol. So let's think about what that distance in space and time between these two events here would be A and B. So A is their successive times when the photon comes down here. And let's just think about what it is in frame S dash. Well, what's the difference in distance between these two events? Well, between A and B. So the distance, the difference is actually zero, because the events occur at the same time. I mean, A is just starting here, up and down, B, same plot, so there's no difference in distance. They occur at the same location. So the only distance, if you like, in space and time, or the only interval between them, is just made up of time. So we might be tempted to say, well, the value for S here, the space-time interval, or the distance in space and time, is just the time it takes, and that time would be 2L divided by C. And using getting to that, we just use the formula time equals distance divided by speed. Distance going up to the top, back down to the bottom, 2L, speed, it's light, travels the speed of light at C. So that might be one first guess for the distance or the interval in space and time, and that would be a reasonable thing. But let's represent that time, but let's actually kind of use different units. And we're free to do that, because if we're measuring a distance from this side of the computer to that side of the computer, we have free choice. We can use meters or kilometers or millimeters or nanometers, whichever units we choose. Now, some will make more sense than others, because you're kind of silly to measure the distance from here to here in kilometers, but we could do that. There's nothing wrong with doing that. So we have generally a free choice of units. So what... I guess it's just the waves, electromagnetic radiation that comes in here, just impacts on the speaker, so the microphone, so it interferes with that. So let's actually use what we might call, light units for distance or for time. So instead of actually measuring time by measuring, in seconds, let's measure time by distance. And let's measure it by the distance that light travels in that amount of time. So in this case, if we want to measure 1 second, well, how far does light travel in 1 second? It travels at 3 × 10⁸ meters. So in light units, if we want to represent that time, we could represent it by that. 2 seconds. And so forth. So all we're doing is just using different units to actually represent time. It's kind of weird because we're representing a time by a distance, so isn't that wrong? But 2 points about that. One is, if someone gives you any of these distances or any distance, you can actually uniquely translate that back and get a time because there's a one-to-one correspondence. And the thing is, in everyday life we do the opposite thing. We actually use times to represent distances. If you might say, oh, so how far is Toronto from Waterloo? I need to get back there tomorrow and drive. So you're asking how far it is. And someone might say, well, it's about 2 hours drive away. And we understand what that means, and we use that all the time. So someone has asked us for a distance, and we've actually given the time. And, that's something that we all understand. And so here we're doing the opposite thing. We're just measuring time in terms of distance units, or light units, if you like. So a little bit strange, but it's just, again, it's just using a non-conventional choice of units, and we're free to choose whatever units we actually like. So if we do that, then the distance we actually have, or we measure the time, we say the time between the two ticks of the clock is just the distance between them. And the distance between them is going L up to the top and then L down to the bottom, so that's 2L. So here we have the time measured there, it's this 2L. So in this reference frame, the space-time distance between the two ticks of the clock is S, or S, and that's actually 2L here. So here we've got S equals 2L in that reference frame. So we've got a measure here. But let's look at the reference frame S dash, so rushing away to the left. So let's use the formula T equals distance divided by speed. And we know the distance here is just, we calculate this distance here. Excuse me, and that's just use Pythagoras. We've got L there, D over 2 there. So the distance is the square root of L squared plus D divided by 2 all squared, just using Pythagoras. And we need to multiply that by 2 because we've got this one distance here, then that distance there. So double that. That's why I get the factor of 2 there and the speed. And now this is the weird thing. So you would think, if Isaac Newton was here and he was still alive, or, genetically, you constructed him from his DNA sample or something like that, then he would say, no, the person, you shouldn't have the speed there, C. What you should have is a greater speed, probably a greater speed here, because the person is moving away from the light, from the direction that the light's traveling in. So we should have some sort of addition of velocity there. And this will cause the person, S dash here, to actually see the light rushing away from them faster. If you're moving away, just as if you're by the side of the road and a car starts riding away at 60 kilometers per hour, and you start riding away your bike at 15 kilometers per hour in the opposite direction, then the speed that the car moves away relative to you is 60 plus 15, 75 kilometers an hour. And that makes complete sense, but that, again, that velocity transformation law breaks down when at relativistic speeds, and it breaks down for the speed of light. And so the weird thing is, this weird thing is that you have C there, and not actually something a little bit greater than C. But that is one of the postulates of special relativity. Everyone measures light to travel at C. And so this is where the weirdness is coming in, if you like, in that denominator there. So we have this equation here. And what we'll do is just do a bit of algebraic manipulation. Let's take the 2 inside the square root. And, oh, actually, let's, we have L here, and we have L here again. So let's actually just plug in into here. L equals S divided by 2 into this equation here. Therefore, we've got S squared divided by 4 there. And if we actually take the 2 under the square root, we get S squared divided by 4, multiplied by 4, the 4's cancel out, and we have a 4 in the denominator there that's cancelled out by the 4 we get here. And so we actually just get S squared plus D squared under the square root sign, and then C in the denominator. So if we square both sides of that equation, we get the T dash squared, which is the time in the S dash frame, and we get S squared plus D squared and C squared on the bottom. So what we do is we just rearrange that, and we end up with this equation you can see in the box there. And that equation is the equation for the distance, or the interval, if you like, or some kind of measure of the distance between A and B, any 2 points, in space and in time. And so the weird thing is, and in some sense you can think of all the weirdness of the aggressor of special relativity being tied up with this minus sign here. And so that is telling you something strange is going on. And that's perhaps not surprising. We know something weird is happening with the speed of light, again. And so if something strange is happening with the speed of light, then again we measure speed in distance and time, units of meters and seconds in standard units. So it's not surprising that something weird is happening with speed and with distance and with time. And so what this is telling us is there's some kind of a strange connection between space and time. So it's something that you might expect. If you just took a Euclidean analogy, we'd have a plus sign there, and everything would be fine. We'd go home, and this would be a very, very short course on relativity. But we know that relativity is not normal, and it's kind of tied up with this minus sign. And we'll see. It's a very, very abstract thing, this minus sign. What does it really mean? And so we'll see what it means as we go along. So, okay, so this is a very important equation. So again, very, very important equation. So if you're looking for an equation you want to put up on your fridge and a fridge magnet or something like that to embody special relativity, this is the one I'd recommend. Okay, so what does it actually mean? Let's get a bit more tangible here. So, one interesting to point out that, okay, let's say you tried this, and I guess maybe I should have a D there instead of an X. So let's say you just tried the normal thing, this Euclidean idea of distance or metric in space and time. Well, it turns out that let's say we're 2 different observers, and that I'm standing here at rest relative to Earth, and you're all in some super duper spaceship, and you're flying past at half the speed of light. Then we'll actually measure X squared plus CT, all squared, to be different values in general. And basically, each different observer will have a different value for that. And that would be like, so what that means is that's not a good concept of distance or of interval. that if you have this value of this function, and I think the distance is one thing, and you think it's another thing, and someone else in another reference frame thinks it's another thing, then it's not an absolute thing, it's a relative thing. And so that's not a good concept. So it doesn't have this universality that we're actually looking for. Because in, say, Galilean physics, everyone measured the distance between two points to be the same thing. So this is what we're looking for. So this naive thing just does not work. And so it's saying that space-time is not Pythagorean or Euclidean. So what are the implications of this? So let's consider some sort of particular projection of the Earth. And sometimes you see these maps here. And I found out the other day that it's called a flat carré, or car, my French is terrible, map of the Earth. So it's a projection. And let's look at points A and B. So we might look at points A and B in that projection and think, what's the distance between those two points? So let's just get out a ruler and measure the distance between A and B, find out what that is, and then that's the distance between them. But that's actually not, because you think of those two points are right up at a latitude of 90 degrees north. And so they're actually on the North Pole, so they are actually the same point. They're right at the top of the Earth. Except, I guess, the way you want to think of this, really, this is kind of wrapped around. So hopefully this makes sense. So they're actually the same point there, the North Pole. So the distance between them really is zero. But what that means is you just cannot take this representation and just get your ruler out and measure distances. And so just as you can't do that, in this case, with space-time diagrams, because we have this unusual notion of distance, you cannot simply measure the space-time distance or the interval S between two events by simply measuring the distance between them on a ruler. So when you have these diagrams, you just can't get, again, a tape measure out, get any two events, measure the distance between them, and that's the space-time interval. It's not as easy as that. You will get a lot of examples of that, and we'll do a lot of cases of you actually measuring the space-time interval. Okay. So what is space-time like then? So if we go back to Euclidean space, a Cartesian XY diagram, what we have is that distance is given by the square root of x squared plus y squared. And for Euclidean space, let's plot the set of all points, or the locus of all points, are a constant distance away from the origin. We know that circles, this is really an equation for a circle. So all the points you can see is kind of like a bullseye there. Dartboard, you can see distance 1, 2, 3, 4, and that makes sense. So let's do the same thing in space and time. And what we actually see, we're actually seeing the structure of space and time, because here, this diagram tells us something very, very deep about the structure of Euclidean space and time. Sorry, Euclidean space. We do exactly the same thing for special relativity. Then what we actually get, remember, we've got the minus sign here, and so really what this is like is an equation like this, y squared minus x squared equals a squared, and to say, well, what is that the equation of? It's the equation of an hyperbola. So if you, let's, in that case, set a equal to 1, so have y squared minus x squared equals 1, then what does that give you? That actually gives you this lower curve here, and it also gives you this lower curve down here. And then for x values of 2 and 3, they give you this one here, that one there, that one there, that one there. So this is kind of hopefully given you some idea. So really, instead of being based on the circle, space and time is actually based on the hyperbola. And that's coming out, it's all coming out of the minus sign there. So again, it's a little bit weird, a little bit abstract, but should become clearer. So, okay. And the technical term is Lorentz space. So, So just hand the poop. Did anyone talk to the string theorist yesterday? Okay. Did they talk about Planck length and space? Did anyone talk to the loop quantum gravity people? Okay, string people did. Okay. Actually, can I just show hands up who's more convinced by string theory? Hands up who's more convinced by loop quantum gravity? Hands up
who. I enjoy my lunch.
Enjoy your lunch. The hands up who doesn't like putting their hands up.
Right.
Okay, great. Okay, so one thing about these theories is that they both say that space is not continuous. That if you actually get down to a really, really tiny scale, we're nowhere near seeing this or being able to experimentally probe it, that it's kind of has this graininess, it has a quantum nature. And that in string theory, space is only defined down to the Planck scale. And the Planck length is 10 to the minus 35 meters. And that's phenomenally tiny. I think a nucleus is incredibly small. A nucleus is about 10 to the minus 15 meters in size. 20 orders of magnitude less than that. It's just, it boggles the mind. But string theory nevertheless says that when you get down to this length, then that's the shortest distance you can have in space. You can have no shorter than that. That's a fundamental length. And that's actually the length of the strings in string theory, this fundamental graininess. And it also says even weirder about space and time. I mean, you thought just one little minus sign was weird. In string theory, they actually says there are actually 9 dimensions of space. So there are 6 extra dimensions. Where are they? Well, they just say they're all little curled up or compactified. Very, very, very small so that we can't see them. So I just raise these to say that in string theory, that just this tradition of unusual things with space and time kind of continues even today. So, yeah, very quickly.
String theorist I was talking to yesterday actually said 10. He's working with 10 dimensions.
Yeah, there are different types of string theory, and some have 9 or 10. So, yep, that's a good point. Yeah, very quickly.
Just to add, the one I talked to was dealing with 1 in 10, but he was getting rid of 4 of them. So we
down with 6.
Okay, yes. Right.
Getting rid of 4 of them so he can work with 6.
Okay. Right, yeah. Often they do that. They use it to use toy theory sometimes because it's hard. So loop quantum gravity. So Simone talked a little bit about that. Again, so we talked about smallest possible area or smallest possible volume. And well, this is actually a bit redundant, but if you go backwards in time tomorrow, yesterday, then you can talk about this. Hopefully you already had a chance. It's a little bit out of order. Okay, so what we want to do now is we want to transform between different frames. And if this was sort of Einstein plus, if it was, I don't know, Newton plus or something like that, I'd be talking about Galilean physics and Galilean transformation. And if I have someone in a reference frame, say on Earth, and that would be T and X to their coordinate system, and there's someone moving at a relative velocity with respect to their light, I'm moving and walking relative to you, then what would my reference frame look like? Then it would be something like this, except the reference frame would be the darker, heavier axes, and it would be actually moving at a constant speed into the right. And so this is what you get for an observer moving at a frame relative to you at some constant speed. You actually just get moving there. Yep.
In Samoy's presentation yesterday, one of his slides said that laws of nature apply in all reference frames, even if they're non-inertial.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct for the quantum gravity?
So, yeah, that's true.
Even non-inertial ones.
Well, I mean, loop quantum gravity is an evolving theory, so I don't think they figured out all the details of that. But I'm sure if he said that in some sense that's correct, or that's what they think is true, especially in loop quantum gravity.
Okay.
So, I mean, both string theory and loop quantum gravity are still figuring out the details, but I'm sure it's correct. So, different reference frames, and here the times are just the same. So, and that just tells you the how to relate the times and the distance, or really to transform between. So they're Galilean transformations. So let's transform between two different reference frames. So what we're now going to do is find the reference frame of someone in special relativity that's moving at, say, let's pick a speed. Let's make it 3/5 of the speed of light relative to us. So they're Klingons in some spaceship zooming past at 3/5 of the speed of light. So, okay, let's make it 3/5. So let's change that to 3/5. 0.6, yeah. So what would the world line look like? So does everyone have their, okay, graph paper and mark. So what does the world line look like? So from the spaceship's perspective, so from Earth, okay, let's see, what's the best way of doing this? So from Earth's perspective, the spaceship is moving at 3/5 of the speed of light. So if we were to draw the world line of the spaceship, as time goes up, what's going to be happening? It's actually moving in the positive x direction. It's moving to the right. So you look at the world line like this, and it turns out that the gradient of that is actually c divided by v. So that would be 5 over 3. So what I'd like you to do now is to actually draw that in, to draw the axes, and to actually draw that line in for the world line of the person moving at 3/5 of the speed of light. And draw the label in. It does actually. That really. What's the best way of seeing that? Sorry. It's the perspective of Earth. Yeah. Well, okay, let's say the faster the spaceship. The other way around. Because the faster the moving in a given amount of time comes forward distance. So if you have something that's say 1 second, you have something moving at this speed. So let's say you have something 1 meter per second, that means every 100 meters you go 1 meter now. But if you change the speed from 2 minutes per second, then 1 second, you go 2 seconds instead of being at this speed. And there's actually a linear relationship. Exactly. So we're looking at the reference around Earth, so let's just put X and CT there. And what we want to find is a world line of this person moving at this speed. So if they're moving at this speed, then for every 5 units of time they go up, they go 3 units of distance across. Because if we have someone, it's basically the greater the speed you're moving, then for every 1 unit of time you go up. So again, let's mark out time. Up here, for every 1 unit of time, or really this is scale time, we've got CT on the axis. So really you can think of this as time, but C is just 3 by 10 to the 8. So we're essentially just scaling time. And we don't have to do that, but the point is if you don't do that, then you get everything here. You get it, the scales just don't match, and everything looks really silly because how far light travels. If you have seconds and meters and light travels is so far in 1 second, then for every second you go up, and then we'd have to go across 3 by 10 to the 8 units on the x-axis, and that would be just so we'd have everything kind of scrunched up here. So we just scale time axis to make things more reasonable. And another way to consider it, you could actually measure years up on the vertical axis and light years across on the horizontal axis, and that would make sense. So if something's going at a higher speed, then for every unit, 1 unit of time it goes up, then it goes a greater distance. So the slope of that actually goes out to be shallower and shallower and more like this here. So this is a case where it's 3/5 of the speed of light. So for for every 2.5 units of time that we go up, we go across here 1.5 units of distance. So I've just 3/5 divided that by, or 5/3 divided by 2. So we go across here, down like this, and then we actually draw a line like this here, and the slope obviously is divided by 1.5 equals 5/3. So, that's the world line for, so I should draw a label here, so really that's the world line for the person in the spaceship. So that's how they're moving. So again, it's no different to the first examples we had before of the person in the rock moving away. Or I guess the person even in the car, the very first point you did, it's exactly the same kind of thing. They're moving to the right. Or if we see them moving in the positive x direction. And we just put the slope on there. So what we have is, but okay, let's look at things from the perspective of the person in the spaceship. Are they moving relative to themselves? No. Coming from their reference frame, they're still, they're stationary, they're not moving relative to themselves. And so if that's the case, then that actually is, that plots out their line. So in there, so what's the line, so if they're not moving relative to themselves, that line there, that word line we just drew, then that corresponds to all the points where, from their perspective, their distance is zero, because they're not, they define their zero in the distance axis. And so just as in the reference frame of someone on Earth is not moving relative to themselves, so what we find is that their, the world line of someone on Earth marks out all these points going up here on CT axis. And that's actually defined, you can define the CT axis because it corresponds to x equals zero. So the set of all points that are zero distance away from the origin on Earth, so zero distance away from someone on Earth. So that equation, x equals zero, defines the line, the C axis or the CT axis. So just as that's the case, points where that are zero distance away from the origin in the primed frame, in the reference frame of the alien in the spaceship, they actually define their time axis too. Just as x equals zero defines the time axis in Earth, then x dash equals zero defines that's how if we draw that equation, a line corresponding to that equation, then that will be the time axis for the person on the spaceship, just as the same thing happens on Earth. And so if that's the case, then we actually, that is just, that axis will just be the set of all the points where the person is, because all the points where the person is, they're zero distance away from the origin of the prime frame, or the frame of the alien in the spaceship, because they actually define, they're their own origin. They actually define, I mean, distance is measured by how far people are away from them. So all these points here actually define and give you a CT dash axis. And so if you could draw this here, so this is how we get the dash axis. So we've got CT dash axis there. So what we want to do again, so what we're doing really, I'll just go back. So we're looking at transforming between reference frames. And again, if this was on Galilean or Newtonian mechanics, it would be very simple. We just get this dash t-axis and this dash x-axis. And that would be very simple. So what we're doing is we're doing this analogous thing, but it's in special relativity. And so we see that already we see we're going to expect something strange is going to happen. This is special relativity. Already see, instead of the time axis being up here the same, we see it's kind of tilted at an angle like this. So this is it. We've got the time axis of someone moving in a spaceship. So we're half the way there. Now all we need to do is just get the space axis, and we're set the x dash axis. So let's go ahead with that. So how do we do that? So maybe if we go back to here. Well, what is the equation that defines the x dash axis there in Galilean physics? Well, if you think about it, that's the think about a line, CT, or I guess we just think about the line or the equation t dash equals zero. That's just a horizontal line at time equals zero. And so that is actually the equation of the line x dash equals zero. So what we want to do is the analogous thing in special relativity. So we actually want to find the equation t dash equals zero here. So this is actually going to be the equation for the x dash axis, the axis, the space axis for the alien. And let's see where that goes. So let's determine it via the procedure. So we have the alien in the spaceship. They're moving at 3/5 of the speed of light relative to Earth. And what they're going to do is, sometime in the past, they're actually just going to send out a beam of light. So we have the schematic alien spaceship. They just turn on a laser beam. The laser beam shifts out way, way, way over here, gets to a mirror, hits a mirror, and then bounces back. And actually bounces back so that it goes back to the spaceship. So it goes out a certain time, a certain distance, and then bounces back. So what we do know is, let's say the alien in their reference frame actually sends the light signal at time t equals minus capital T. So that's that time there, t dash equals minus capital T. And it returns to the spaceship at time t dash equals plus t. That's actually how we set it up. We arrange the mirror so that that happens. And we can do that. We just shift the mirror anywhere we want to. So that's the scenario we're considering. And so if that's the case, well, the light takes, what time will the light, what time will it be in the spaceship's frame when the mirror actually gets to, when the light actually gets to the mirror?
Zero.
Absolutely, yep, zero. So it's minus T here, and it's plus T when it gets back, and it travels the same. Travels half the distance, and so it traveled half the distance in time zero, so it's zero here. And so, great, this is fine. So the event of the light hitting the mirror here actually corresponds to ct dash equals zero. And that's fantastic, because what we're looking for is we're looking for all the points where ct dash equals zero. This is what we want to. We want to find all these points, and we just connect the dots between them, and then that will give us our x dash axis. Just, yes?
What do you tell a student who says, but in the time that the light traveled to the mirror, the spaceships moved closer?
Sorry?
You're telling students you're traveling it with the speed of light. You've done, your regular frame.
Right.
I know we're in relativistic frames here, but I can see the question coming up of, but the light went this way and hit the mirror, and then it came back with the spaceship.
But that's only in the frame of Earth. In the spaceship's frame, the spaceship isn't moving. So,
Is that the mirror stays the same distance away from the spaceship the entire time, so the mirror is with the...
Is that...
So it doesn't matter. So I don't think if you can have the mirror being stationary in the Earth's frame. You can have it doesn't matter. So let's make it concrete. Let's have the mirror being stationary. So the mirror is stationary with respect to the Earth. So it's moving relative to
your clock, right?
Sorry.
You're talking about the mirror clock.
You can think of it like that. That's the way, but you can actually have it. You can actually have it being stationary. It doesn't really matter. It's just got to hit some mirror. You don't care what the history of the mirror. So that's probably the easiest way to think about it. So maybe you can do it either way. But we'll see that in the space-time diagram. But basically, all you're concerned about is the event where the mirror hits that. And so we'll see in 2 minutes a space-time diagram. So as light travels at c, okay, we're looking for all these points where this condition is satisfied. And just as in Galilean relativity, they would define a set of points that would be along here, and we just join the dots, and that would give us our x prime axis, and we have our t prime axis here. If we find all the set of points here, no, that's wrong. So it shouldn't be the zero there. Is there a... Yep. If we find all the points, all these points where this condition is satisfied in special relativity, then yep. We can do the same things. So this is what we're heading towards. So as what we want to do is actually we've got this event of the, and hopefully this will make things clearer, of the light actually traveling to the spaceship, sorry, the light traveling to the mirror and then bouncing back. So how does that look to someone on Earth? So how do they see the light moving? What speed do they see the light moving at? So everyone measures, everyone always measures light to travel at the speed of C. So if everyone measures light to travel at the speed of C, then the person on Earth, they'll actually look at the world line of the light, the actual sequence of events of the line bouncing from the spaceship to the mirror and then back again. They'll actually see that as traveling at the speed of light. And if something travels at speed of light, then that actually on the space-time graph that we have, they actually have that actually has a slope of 1. So something travels at the speed of light and actually has a slope of 1. And to see that, then the speed... that works out. So the speed of something obviously equals the distance divided by the time. The distance divided by the time. So something traveling at the speed of light. See that what we want to find out is what C delta T. So on the graphs we've got CT on the vertical axis, X on the horizontal axis. So the gradient or the slope of that is C delta T divided by delta X, and we want that to be 1. And you can actually see if something travels at the speed of light, then we have C there, and we might make that one second. But in 1 second, the distance that it travels, if we're traveling at the speed of light, is 3 by 10 to the 8 meters. And so what we have is the C's, 3 by 10 to the 8s cancel out here. And if you figure out the units, they actually cancel out. They'll actually give you seconds. So the seconds. Just give you one there, dimensionless. Okay, so this is something traveling at the speed of light, and that there is equal to the ratio of C delta T divided by delta X. And so this is just the slope on CT versus x-axis, and that slope is 1 when it's traveling at the speed of light. And so that is why everyone actually measures, so slope is 1, 45 degrees, is that's why the person on Earth, they actually measure and see the light, actually the world line for it, as actually being at a 45 degree slope. So, okay, so if everyone could get their diagrams out, and what we'll do, so the question is, if that's the case, what does the world line for the light look at? So I've got the light leaves the spaceship, hits the mirrors, and then bounces back. And if we were to plot that looking at the perspective of someone on Earth, so this is all space-time diagrams relative to someone on Earth, what will the correct space-time diagram be for the path or sequence of events of the light? So you have 4 options there. So what I'd like you to do is to find the right answer by, you could rub out what you've got in your, you can keep what you have in your space-time diagram now, but actually draw down what you think the right answer is. So get to the right answer by actually drawing all the events on your space-time diagram. So away you go. I just Okay, the mirrors are traveling at the same speed.
Yeah, that's right. So you can use the other one. Yeah, because this is traveling. That makes sense. Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
because the spaceship is traveling less than the because the spaceship can never travel
Thank you.
You got light for it. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so then if this is a point CT, then it's also another point with CT. So we've got one point here. Exactly. Yeah, one point, 2 points, and it's probably going to be a straight line. All we're going to do is join up the dots. Actually, no, what it should be at is like it's built here. So it's actually a question about that. Yeah, you can actually help it out.
Hits the mirror, trying to dash equals zero, then it comes back again at a gain of 45 degree angle, but in the other direction. So that is right. So what we'll do now is we'll take a coffee break, and we'll make short break because we want to rush back. We don't want to miss any of Hans Westman's seminar. So we'll take a 10-minute coffee break, and we'll come back here at 1:40, and then we'll have I'm going to go to the next one.
I'm going to go to the next one.